Welcome to the West Harland Way Race Podcast. I'm John Kinniston and this is episode 25. There are certainly lots of races going on at the moment. I'm recording this on Sunday evening on the 22nd of July, and this weekend there's been some more exciting races going on in this part of the world. Yesterday it was the Clyde Stride, which was the next in the some series of races, and I called in and saw the runners. Actually, we were on our way to go and watch Motherwell against Everton, and we happened to sort of see the runners go past Strathclyde Park, so that was quite fun. And there seemed to be some great running going on, particularly those who did the West Harland Way race just 4 weeks previously. To run this as well takes a bit of doing, and there's a number of people who were doing both and did very well. Congratulations to Donny Campbell, who won the race. And if you want to find out more, then do go to the Clyde Stride website or the Facebook, and the results and information and photos are on there, which is good to see. And then the other race that was going on today that we had a number of the West Harland Way family taking part was down in South Wales, the Celtic Plate, 100k. And again, some great performances there in very unseasonably hot weather. But a great performance from Thomas, who came fourth in 28.32. And also... who else was under 20, 30? No, I think others, Marco and Matt, were just around about 7.51 and 7.55. So great performances from them. And I'm sure, again, we'll find out more of the results and more of the details in time to come. This episode, we've got three items. First of all, I've read out Terry Conway's race report. Terry Conway, as you know, won the race and a new record this year of 15 hours 39 minutes and 15 seconds, and he keeps a really good blog, so I thought, well, I'll read out his race report, because that fitted in very well with an interview I did this week with Paul Giblin, who came second in the race, and obviously they had a good race together, so I thought those two would fit well together. So I've read out Terry's race report, and then the that's followed by my interview with Paul Giblin this week. So again, that's hopefully some good interesting listening to in that one. And then the third item is Dave Waterman's Pyranical Ramblings, number 3. Not quite sure what it's about, because I'm recording this before it's actually come down, but I've been promised it's on its way, so I'll add that on to this podcast as well. And I think Dave was going to give his thoughts and his view on the race from his perspective. So that's the podcast for this week. I must admit, there'll probably be a little bit of a break in podcasts over the next 2 or 3 weeks. My big race of the year is coming on Friday, the Lakeland 100. So I'll be pretty busy next weekend running for most of the weekend, and then probably the weekend after writing about it and doing my videos and various other things that I like to do. So there's a good chance that I probably won't get around to doing a podcast as well. So there might be a little bit of a break. And I'm thinking maybe I'll just do it monthly from now on for the next few months until we get to the race starting up again. So this episode, we've got Terry Conway, race report, my interview with Paul, and then Dave's Pyranical Ramblings. It'd be really good to interview the West Harland Way 2012 race winner, Terry Conway, at some point. But he's a pretty busy guy. I'm recording this on Saturday, the 21st of July. And tomorrow he's running in the Celtic Plate 100k against the Scottish team. And then on Friday, he's running in the Lakeland 100 race, which I'm doing as well. So I don't suppose I get a chance to see him next weekend. But anyway, I thought the next best thing is to actually read out his race report. I'm sure a good number of people have read it on his blog, which is terryconway.blogspot.co.uk. But it's a great read, and I thought not only would I get a chance to read it, but I could imagine being in his shoes as I read it out. So this is Terry Conway's race report from the 2012 race. Essentially, the object of the West Highland Way race is simple. You start at Mulgay Railway Station, 7 miles north of Glasgow, at 1 a.m. on Saturday the 23rd of June 2012 and run, jog, walk to Fort William Leisure Centre by noon on the Sunday 24th of June 2012. 35 hours to cover 95 miles, including 14,760 feet of ascent. I like that. It's simple, clear and concise. So at 1 a.m. on Saturday the 23rd of June 2012, I left Mulgay Railway Station and arrived at Fort William Leisure Centre via the West Highland Way some 19 hours, 39 minutes and 15 seconds later. Here are some of the bits before, during and after the race, in case you're interested. For safety reasons, competitors must have a motorised support crew of at least two people to provide logistic support, as well as the manpower to find a runner should he, she get into distress. I had managed to rope my old man, Rich, and my beautiful wife, Annie, into providing this unselfish and vital role, which I think they actually quite enjoyed. So, on Friday the 22nd of June, all three of us are on our way to Scotland on a wee road trip. I had booked us into a place to stay in Balmahar so I could relax pre-race and the old man and Annie could get a couple of hours sleep if they chose. We arrived at Mulgay around 11 o'clock and I throw my drop bags into the cars waiting at the train station. We then make our way to registration. I collect my race number, get weighed and collect a goodie bag. I then realise that I've numbered my drop bags incorrectly. So I rush back to the drop bag cars and search them out, remember them and throw them back into, renumber them and throw them back into the cars. All good fun and made the time pass a little faster. I then return to our car and relax until the race briefing at around 12:30 a.m. Race briefing over, I do my final checks and then make my way to the start line. As usual, I don't really have a race plan. Jez Bragg's fantastic record from 2006 was something to aim for. Sure, I wanted the record, and I thought that maybe if things go well, I could be in with a chance. But you can never take anything for granted. So my plan was simple. Run. The race. Some said the weather was atrocious. Others said probably the worst in the history of the event. Seeing as this was my first time here, I couldn't really comment, but I think it would be fair to say it was pretty wet and windy. Mulgay to Balmahar, 20 miles. 1 a.m. and we're off. Pretty much immediately there is a lead pack of four, including myself, Paul Giblin, Craig Cunningham and Wouter Overmeer. The first section of the route is pretty flat and it's easy to go off too fast. There are also a lot of gates. I got to open a lot of gates. There was also a lot of frogs out on the path. I got to jump over a lot of frogs. All good fun. Just before Drimmen, Craig and Walter really picked up the pace on the tarmac. That didn't really interest me too much, so I backed off a bit and started chatting to Paul Giblin. I didn't realise who Paul was when I first started talking to him. I had met Paul at the Highland Fling briefly and thought I saw him at the start, but wasn't sure. Paul is a top man and he has a fantastic crew in Team Pylon, and I hope to see him and crew on the trail in the near future. Running towards Carnickill was beautiful. The wind and rain had picked up, the paths had turned to small rivers, and the climb up the hill was now a waterfall. I was having an absolute ball. If the climb was pretty funky, the descent was even more fun. It was hard to see if you are running on mud, rock or grass. A number of times I find myself mud surfing, which was pretty cool. We dropped down into Balmahar, and I'm met by the old man who's in fantastic form, topping up my water bottle and sending me on my way. I won't see my crew now until Auchtertier Farm, some 50 miles into the race. Balmahar Road to Rowardennan, 27 miles. The other three runners had moved through Balmahar pretty quickly, but I soon caught up through the woods before Malachy. Paul then darted off to the right. I wasn't sure where he was going until I noticed the toilet sign at the Ranger's hut. All of a sudden, it was just me and Craig running together. It was great to be finally running along the lockside. Now and again, Craig would go off into what seemed a wild sprint, but would then slow down where I would join him again. This carried on for most of the way until we started chatting on a climb. Craig mentioned that he had something going on with his hamstring and was trying to run it off. I wasn't sure that fartlek training was the best option for a 95-mile race, but I guess you'll never know till you try. I slowly pulled away from Craig before running into Rabadenan, where I found my drop bag and then carried on. This was the last I was to see of anyone else in the race. Rabadenan to Inversnaid, 34 miles. Not much to report on this section. Some of the streams had turned into full-blown waterfalls, which added a bit of fun, but I was in some sort of groove, enjoying running through nature and loving the trail. I soon dropped into Inversnaid, ready to grab my drop bag, but the crew weren't quite ready for me, so I jumped into the van to search through numerous bags to find mine. Luckily, I found it quite quickly, had a giggle with the crew and cracked on. That kept me amused for at least a couple of minutes. Inversnaid to Ben Glass Farm, 41 miles. This section of the race is probably the hardest. I wouldn't call the trail technical, I would say it's awkward. There are plenty of technical bits to get your teeth into, but there are some parts where you are just not quite sure where to put yourself. It was like a game of Twister, the path being fairly runnable in places, with awkward tree roots to negotiate and plenty of undulations. But I was feeling great. My previous two experiences of this section were during the Highland Fling races, in which I had suffered severe cramp. It was beautiful to enjoy the trail and have legs that could function. Unfortunately, this is where we leave Loch Lomond. Ben Glass Farm to Auchtertier, 50 miles. An uneventful section, but I had the wind and rain to keep me company. Just kept the rhythm going, one foot in front of the other, and run. It was great to finally hit the gate above Crean Larrick and enter the enchanted forest for a change of scenery. Not long now, and I'll see my crew for the first time since Balmahar. Happy days. When I reach Auchtertier, I'm welcomed by my crew, checkpoint staff and supporters. Great to see someone for the first time in a while. I get weighed, fill up my water bottles, and I'm off again. Auchtertier to Bridge of Orkney, 60 miles. Thankfully, the weather was still wet and windy. Who needs glorious sunshine when you can get hypothermia instead? It was strange running through by the way campsites at Tyndrum, knowing that I still had 40-odd miles left. It's the finish for the Highland Fling race, and I usually get to enjoy a beer and some food. Today, I had nuns and gels. Bridge of Orkney to Glencoe, 70 miles. There's a fantastic little climb out of Bridge of Orkney, and then after that, the route can best be described as arduous. I walked from Tyndrum to Glencoe the day after the Highland Fling this year, and I remember thinking, well, this section sucks. Hauling yourself through the barren Rannoch Moor could be soul-destroying, but luckily the wind and rain kept me occupied and it didn't feel too bad. Glencoe to Kinlochleven, 81 miles. Running into Glencoe Ski Resort, I see my crew who look thoroughly wet but in a pretty cool mood. It's good to see loved ones again, and I leave with that extra bit of funk in my legs. Well, yeah. Hell yeah. The devil's staircase ahead. Let's have ya. I stick on my bright orange wind smock at this point. It didn't look too appealing ahead. I know the staircase is there, but I can't see it with the thick clag and rain. Legs still feeling pretty good, but it was a battle to just get to the staircase running against the constant headwind. The devil's staircase was an enjoyable climb, a welcome break from running, but I forgot how long the descent into Kinlochleven was, and the gaps in between. I still really enjoyed the trail, but boy, it goes on. It was just before Kinlochleven that I realised that I had a chance of breaking the course record. Kinlochleven to Fort William, 95 miles. Running into the checkpoint, it was great to see the buzz and excitement of my crew and everyone else. I'm guessing at this point they also realised that I was on for the course record. No time to stick around then, I've got places to go. Ah, the climb out of Kinlochleven was hard work. Reaching the top and getting onto the old military road took quite a bit of effort. The wind and rain were still relentless and it was hard work running against the headwind. It was also the first time that I noticed I was getting cold. I guess the weather and the sustained effort was taking its toll. Finally, I reached Llandavera, where the weather had somehow gotten worse. I could feel my energy being drained away. My legs were heavy and I started to feel pretty sorry for myself. I then looked at my watch and realized that I was slowing down a lot. Time was getting away. It felt like it was took forever to reach the forest tracks and get some shelter from the rain. I looked at my watch again, and at that point, I truly believed I had blown my opportunity to break the record. The last 3 or 4 miles. I felt utterly defeated at this point. How could I blow this chance, you idiot? Thankfully, coming out of the final climb, a surge of emotions and raw energy infected my whole body and mind. I'm not giving up on this yet. There's only one way to run down the tracks into Fort William, and that's hard. And man, did I run hard. I went for broke at this point and ran as fast as I have ever run in my life. My quads were pounding, my feet sore, and my groin cramping. It was fantastic. My body was filled with adrenaline and I was taking full advantage. I glanced at my watch again. This is going to be tight. I still thought I would miss out by seconds. Finally, the road. Not far now. I can't feel my legs anymore, and this road keeps on going. I know the end is near, but I can't see it. The West Harlem Way sign comes into view. My watch tells me that I have seconds, but I can't remember how far the finish line is from here. I see Annie ahead. Another surge of raw power ignites my body, and I go for it, full on sprint. I jump into the Fort William Leisure Centre steps, and I'm done. 15 hours, 39 minutes, and 15 seconds. Really? I was sure that I was going to make it. That's when I remembered my watch is set 5 minutes fast. I then do my usual post-race routine of fainting and passing out for a couple of hours. Post-race. On Sunday, we joined in with the presentations where every single person who had finished the race was awarded with the infamous goblet and a round of applause. It was simply fantastic. I made some great new friends during the event, and this quote I've taken from an email I received sums it up beautifully. The Way is a truly magical event that challenges everyone in their own way. Adrian Stott. So thank you very much, Terry, and a big congratulations from me and the rest of the West Harlem Way family. I thought as well it might be fun just to read some of the comments out that were put on Terry's blog with that report. So like I said, huge congratulations and a great report. When you finished, I was just about halfway. Amazing performance to set a new record in these conditions. Ian Wallace, fantastic report, Terry, and congratulations on such an interesting run. I love the description of the section after Inversnaid as a game of Twister. Ha ha. Ali Brian Jones, congratulations, Terry, an amazing run and great report too. I think likening the trail around Inversnaid to a game of Twister is probably the best way I've ever seen it described. It's great to see that elite athletes like yourself, who can run infeasibly quickly up the West Harlem Way, get the same buzz and go through the same emotions as the rest of us. It's the whole kinship thing that I like most about ultra running. Fiona Rennie, a game of Twister. Love it. It's a perfect description. One of my favourite bits. Although I say that about every section really. Congratulations on a great run and report. Ian Shanks, congratulations on your fantastic run. Really enjoyed reading the blog. Made me smile how many times you used the word fun. Keith Hughes, congratulations, Terry, on a fantastic run. It really was fun, wasn't it? All the best, Keith. And from Paul Giblin, what can I say that hasn't already been said, Terry? Absolutely stunning performance. Was great to see some of it happen. Wishing you all the success in the world for future races. Hopefully see you at some point soon, Paul. So again, thank you, Terry, and hopefully one day we will be able to get a chance to actually interview you, and all the best for your races, particularly the Lakeland 100 next weekend. Well, today for our latest podcast, we've got Paul Giblin. It's great to have Paul with us. And those who don't know, Paul has done the race twice, and this year he came second. And so we're going to find out a little bit more about those races. So thanks very much, Paul, for coming today. And maybe first of all, you could just introduce yourself and particularly give us a little bit of a background of why you got into ultra running in particular.
Hi, thanks for that, John. I'm Paul Giblin. I've only been running ultras for, last year was my first season. That was also my first West Island Way race. So I'm into my second season. It's probably been a little bit trickier than the first season. My first ever race was the D33 in Aberdeen. And I hadn't really heard of ultras before. And I think a friend had sent me an email to say, oh, look at this race, it's something that you might fancy. And that was for the Highland Fling. So I had a look and I applied quite quickly without really thinking about it. I think before that I had run two 10k races, nothing else. I hadn't run a marathon or anything. Although I had been doing some distance just in training, just because I enjoyed running. So I applied for the Highland Fling, and then I obviously spent some time online working out how best to train for the Highland Fling. And I came across the D33, so that seemed to be a sensible ultra to try first. I did the D33, I finished reasonably well, I think I was 10th or 11th. And then I went on to do the Highland Fling, which I really enjoyed. It was the longest race I'd done, the longest distance I'd run at the time. Following that, I think I did the Catoran Ultra after that, which was a really great day. I just had a fantastic day. I felt great the whole race, and I finished in first place, which was a total surprise to me and to my family. And then from there, somebody said, oh, you could probably get into the West Highland Way race, and that's how I ended up doing the West Highland Way, which by that time I'd read quite a lot about and I'd really wanted to do it, albeit it did feel a bit early for me to attempt that. So yeah, I'm really glad I did at the time. I had a few trials on the race itself, but I guess we'll come on to that.
Yeah, I think for those of us who are involved in Scotland ultra running, I think you just burst onto the scene, to be honest. You know, I remember getting our knowledge after you won the catering. You know, people said, oh, have you seen this guy Paul Giblin? You know, he just came from nowhere and won this race. So it was exciting for us as well. And I think the when you did the West Highland Way race last year, everyone was really interested to see how you'd get on. And so maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. Obviously, that was the furthest you'd ever run. Suddenly, you were known in a sense. You couldn't just creep in, could you? People were expecting a good performance from you. So how did that first race go last year?
I guess, I don't know. I was probably a little bit naive about it. I just thought I had some confidence from the three races that I had done. I always had it in my head that I'd be able to finish the West Highland Way. I wasn't really sure what was going to happen on that journey of 95 miles. So I guess I wasn't entirely sure what was the best thing to do in training. I obviously started doing some kind of longer back-to-back runs at weekends to try and get my overall endurance level a little bit better. And then it was really just run and see what happens, which I did. I felt pretty strong through most of the race, the first West Highland Way. Anybody who's read my blog obviously will know that I had a bit of a navigational error towards the end, just coming into Kinloch Leaving, which I was really disappointed about because I felt I'd run a really good race. I'd sat, you know, between 4th and 6th in the race, and I was really happy that I was going to get a really good finish and I'd be a comfortable finish around 18 hours or whatever it was going to be. So I was very disappointed at the end. When I'd lost, you know, probably an hour anyway, and then the last leg was particularly tough then when I had to try and get through that in my mind as well. So it was a really great experience though.
Excuse me, on that bit, whereabouts do you get lost?
Get lost? Yeah. it's funny now, and when I did the race this year, I didn't stop at the point where I got lost, but I did kind of chuckle to myself about how I could manage to get lost. So really, to anybody who knows it and has been down and you're coming off the hill and you're really quite close to getting into Kinloch Leaving, you'll see the big pipes. There's a branch that goes off to the right, but it almost goes back on yourself.
Yeah.
I ended up turning up that branch for some reason, and I got further and further lost then, and I just convinced myself in my head that it was all going to work out and it'd be fine and this couldn't be happening to me. Just keep going and it'll be fine. But obviously it wasn't. I had to pick myself up and get back on and try and finish the race.
Yeah. Okay, so besides the navigational mistake that you made, what were the big lessons that you learned from that first year? You said you were maybe a bit naive going into it. As you look back on that first race, what were the big things you learned?
I was probably a little bit smarter in terms of my race planning, in terms of my nutrition, and I think I'd certainly got my training much better this year. I'd spent probably a bit longer runs at weekends, maybe not trying to go as fast, and maybe fewer of the speed sessions. I did probably longer sessions. I certainly spent more time off-road and doing a lot of quite steep hill runs as well, which I think really helped. But I guess on the from the first one, I just had a more confidence that I could complete it. I stuck better to my plan. John, you'll know obviously from my first year racing, I tended to run away at the start just because I was excited, it was new to me, and I really enjoyed running, and I enjoyed running with people. I probably got too excited at the start, so a wee bit more confidence that I could maybe take it a little bit easier at the start and save some for a bit later on.
Okay, so in a sense, you've answered a few things there, but in your preparation for this year's race, what did you do differently based on that knowledge of what you'd done the previous year?
Yeah, I guess for this year, I have to be a little bit smarter with my training. I had a little bit more free time the previous year with work commitments. A new job this year meant I've got probably less time to commit to training, so I had to be a little bit smarter about when I was doing things. So I've always got up pretty early. Anybody who follows me on Twitter will know I usually leave the house at 4:44, although I'm not superstitious at all, but running has made me so slightly. So I do slightly longer runs in the morning, and I'll quite often run home from work again at night. So then at the weekends, I probably did quite a lot of road runs, which were quite long, maybe doing 25 to 35 miles on the road, just because it was easier in terms of time. I didn't have to travel somewhere. But certainly this year, I spent more time in the hills and I did some tougher runs. They might have been slower overall, but they were certainly tougher. And I think that really helped me. I didn't suffer any kind of cramps at all. My legs felt stronger. And it was a reasonably comfortable race for me this year, which was a big difference from the first time.
Okay, so you came to this year's race. As we know, the weather wasn't very good, and I think the majority of the field were significantly slower, except for maybe you and Terry, who absolutely just blew the field away. So what was it like running with Terry, and what was it like in your own race this year?
I think the weather, it maybe helps some people, it maybe puts others off, but I quite like it when it's good Scottish weather in some ways. I certainly prefer that from it being really hot. I remember, I think it was last year in the Highland Fling, it was really, really warm. And I think that probably caused people more issues than the rain. So I was reasonably comfortable with it. Once you're out there and you're moving, it's generally okay. What was the other question you asked? Sorry?
Just how did the race go, particularly racing
With Terry? I'd spoken to Terry a couple of times, mostly through Twitter, and we briefly chatted before the Highland Fling of this year. So as we started the race, obviously, I was aware that Terry was going out to break the record, and I was aware that he was obviously capable of doing so. So I guess we ran until just after Drimmen, really. There was four of us in a pack, and we didn't really say anything to anyone, which really does make me laugh sometimes. We're obviously all got the same target in mind, but we don't really chat about it. So I think it was after we got through Drimmen and we started climbing the hill, Terry and I had a good conversation. We chatted probably right until over Connacht Hill, until we got down towards Bamaha. Seemed a really nice guy. He was really interested in the races I'd run. We chatted about the Highland Fling. Terry's never quite had the result in Highland Fling that he's hoped for and he's capable of, so I'm sure he'll be back to do that at some point as well. So it was really positive, it was really nice to chat to him. Just after Bamaha, I stopped to go to the toilet, and that was the last I saw Terry really until the end, so yeah, that was that.
Yeah. And then the rest of your race?
Rest of my race, by that time then I think I was fourth, so I caught the other person before Robert Denon. And then I caught up with Craig Cunningham, who I've spoken to at a number of races. I really like Craig. I caught up with him just coming into Inversnaid. So after that, and being half eaten by midges at Inversnaid, I set off pretty quickly with some food, and then I was pretty much on my own for the rest of the race then. It's a shame I couldn't have caught up Terry at all, but it was an amazing performance from him, so I was happy enough with the result.
And I'm sure the majority of people know that your time was 17 hours, no minutes, and 26 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'd like to know just what happened to those 26 seconds.
That's a very good question. It's really, I'm just thinking about the race next year. I just wanted to build in a decent target for next year, I think. No, I mean, it's easy to look back and think I should have been able to get 26 seconds from somewhere, and I could. And if I spend too much time thinking about it, I'll probably get upset. So I guess it's easy to look back. Towards the end of the race, I kind of had it in my head that I was going to miss it from the calculations that I was trying to do in my watch. So then I'd half thought, well, I'll just get to the end and that'll be that. And it was only in the last maybe mile or mile and a half I realised I could potentially get under the 17. So I did try my hardest to really move at the end to get under 17, but it didn't quite work out, sadly, as John reminded me.
Well, as you say, it gives you a target for next year.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'd all love to see you go well under the 17 hours. That would be great. Just tell us a little bit about your plans for the rest of the year. I'm sure this is one of your main races, but what plans have you got for the rest of 2012?
I've got a few races coming up. Last week, I think it was, or the week before, I had agreed to do a Bob Graham round, or attempt a Bob Graham round, which was 2 weeks after the West Island Bay, which was obviously at the time I thought it was going to be a little bit tight. And it turns out that, combined with the weather, was just too close to the race, and I didn't finish, and the rest of the guys didn't finish either, sadly. So I've done a bit of resting since. I'm probably going to do the Clydestride on Saturday, and then just training for TDS out at UTMB in Chamonix on the 30th, I think, of August. So I'm really excited about that. It's the first time I've travelled abroad to race, so I'm really, really excited about that, to be honest. And then after that, I'm hoping to try and fit in one of the last Sums races if I can. That's the plan so far, and then I'm not sure what I'm doing towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
Maybe take a rest.
Yeah. Great. Well, all the best in that one, and again, we'll look forward to following your progress. Just before you came today, Paul, I put on Twitter and Facebook for people to ask any questions, and I got a few back, and there were three of them that were to do with your vegan diet. From Sandra, did you become a vegan for your running? Deb's asked, being a vegan, what do you eat during a race? And Colin Knox was interested to know what's on the menu leading up to an ultra race. So there's a few questions in there.
Okay. Yeah, it's a funny thing, being tagged as a vegan. It's not something I'm totally comfortable with, just because people's perceptions of a vegan, either I'm not that bothered about food, I don't particularly like food, or I really want to try and convert everybody I speak to become a vegan. I've been vegetarian since I was a teenager. It was when I've just started university. There were a few food scares at the time. There was E. coli, mad cow disease, and I didn't make a huge decision to become a vegetarian. I just thought I would cut back for a period. So I stopped eating meat for a few days, and it just went from there, and I've never eaten meat since. The additional step to go vegan is probably, I've been vegan for about 12 months. So really, I'm on a whole food, plant-based diet. Which I'm quite passionate about, and it wasn't just about my running, although I do think it helps my running. I'm really keen to understand what goes into my body, so I don't like eating processed foods. And I'm quite keen to make sure everything that I'm doing is healthy and it's good for me, and I feel much better about it. I better understand how my body reacts to the food that I eat as well. And I think from a running point of view, I think I recover more quickly than I did previously, and I think I've probably got more energy than I've ever had. it does take a bit of work. It's probably a sacrifice for my girlfriend and for my family, who are very supportive, but it does make things awkward for people because I've got everybody now checking, is there milk in something? And you'd be astonished at how many things have milk in them, and you just wouldn't think it at all. So it's really helped me, I think. I read a number of books, obviously, as well. There's quite a lot of chat from some endurance athletes about being a vegan and being based on a whole food, plant-based diet. So I've read quite a lot about it, and I'm really quite passionate about it, but I don't want to ram it down anyone's throat, obviously. Yeah. It's something I do and I choose to do. I don't have issues with anybody who chooses to eat meat or dairy products or whatever. That's everybody's entitled to their choice, so it's just something that I do. So in terms of in a race itself, I do make some of my own kind of energy bars and gels, which help sometimes. I do obviously have the normal commercial type gels that people have too, but I try and eat as much natural stuff as I can. But obviously sometimes in a race situation you want to get, you know, a quick burst of calories and a quick sugar hit, so that's what I end up turning to. Before a race, I think Colin, you'd asked about what I would eat before a race. I kind of tend to stick to my normal diet, so I eat salads with everything that I eat, so that probably includes breakfast, lunch and dinner. I eat a lot of kind of pulses and grains like quinoa and millet and stuff, so I tend to just stick to my normal diet. I had experimented before with having more protein before it and fewer carbohydrates, and then obviously a couple of days before having additional carbohydrates, but I never really felt it worked for me, so I kind of tend to stick to my normal diet. And as you'll know, I had a couple of issues in a few races this year with stomach problems, so I don't think that change was helping me, in that I was cutting out carbohydrates for a period and then, you know, being heavy on the carbs for a couple of days before the race. So the last few races I've just been normal diet and everything's been great so far.
Isn't Scott Jurek, he's a he's just written the book, isn't he?
Yeah, it's good.
Have you read that?
Yeah.
You recommend that, would you?
Yeah, it's definitely worth a read. He's quite an individual, obviously. He's got an amazing record, but he's not too overboard with his thoughts and theories on food. So definitely recommend that as a worthwhile read. He goes into a lot of detail about specific races, so it gives you a really good understanding of what goes through the mind of somebody who can win 6 or 7 Western States or whatever it is he's won. He's an incredible athlete.
And maybe one day you'll bring your book out.
Don't think so.
Yeah. And then we had a couple of questions about your training. Ian Wallace asks, in a peak training, how many miles would you run? How much of that would be vertical? Do you do a lot of local up and down on the hills? And he just said, congratulations on your run, by the way. And then Colin again asked, a typical week, mileage-wise, terrain, do you do speed work, fartlek? So a few questions on your training.
Okay, typical, I guess. I do tend to do some base, build and peak training weeks. I probably average on a kind of base and build week, I'm probably doing 80 to 90 miles a week. On the peak weeks, I'll get up probably 95 to 120 miles in a week, whenever I can. Obviously, it's difficult when you're working full time and you've got other commitments too. But as I mentioned earlier, you have to be quite smart about it. So I tend to run before work. I'll run at lunchtime if I can. And then I'll also maybe run home. So I do a lot of kind of back-to-back runs. Colin's question was...
Colin was asking just the sort of variety, you know, do you do terrain, hill, speed work, fartlek?
Yeah, I mean, this year I've done a lot more hills. So I'll maybe try and get about 10,000 feet in a week if I can. So that's kind of long hill runs on a Saturday is the only time I can really get out there. But I'll try and do some shorter...
Is it up and down hills you do?
Yeah, up and down. So you maybe try and get 3 or 4 kind of Munro type peaks if I can. I've got... My family's got a place out, Arriker, so there's loads of decent hills there for running. I try and get up there as often as I can. and also down to the Lake District when I can. It's only a couple of hours in the car now, and there's so many good fells there to run, obviously. But I could do with some more practice on the Bob Graham route, probably, which I'll try and get done this year. But also try and do some shorter kind of hill sprints as well, Colin, up at the Glenfer Braes, which you'll know well. Yeah. I think it's worth doing that at times, just kind of short hill sprints. I think it really helps the legs on the longer stuff, and it really helped me this year in the West Highland Race. Yeah.
Great. There was one more question as well from Andy Johns, and he was asking, is it possible to hire out your support team? He said they were tremendous when he saw them, and because I know they've been very supportive, haven't they?
They have, yes. They're better known than I am, and they seem to know everybody in the scene better than I do as well. No, I'm really, really lucky to have them. They've been so supportive right from the first race that we did, the D33 in Aberdeen, when we were all absolute amateurs. We had no idea what we were doing. We didn't know about checkpoints, we didn't know about changing bottles or whatever. It was all a bit of a disaster, but we've all had an amazing journey since then, to be honest, and we've had some really fantastic memories and some really good quality time we've spent as a family. So for that, the running's just been amazing, and ultra running has given us a lot to talk about and some really fantastic memories. And I think they've met some excellent people along the way as well. I hear lots of the stories after the race, because sadly I seem to miss a lot of what goes on. It's heads down, and I am conscious at times that I maybe don't say very much to them over the course of the West Highland Way race, as an example. Maybe 30 or 40 words maybe over a 17-hour period. So they do put up with a lot. But it's been invaluable support to me along the way, and I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah. Great, thank you very much. And just to finish with, I've just got a series of some short questions. These are ones that we've been asking people about the West Highland Way in particular, and just preferences. There's not right or wrong in these things, but it's quite interesting for people to get a feel of what folks do. Okay, so on shoes, would you wear road shoes or trail shoes?
Trail shoes.
Yeah. In particular?
I like quite minimal light shoes. So I love the New Balance I've got. The 110s are perfect for the West Highland Way. Absolutely brilliant. And I think they're only about £34. Can't say fairer than that.
Very good. Do you have a favourite food that you turn to keep you going when your energy level's getting a bit low?
No, not particularly. I had I had porridge this year a couple of times, which they had made very liquid porridge, so I could virtually drink it, and that really kept me going this year, and it was quite good.
Yeah. Do you run with a hydration pack or a water bottle?
Bottles. I much prefer bottles. I'll take a pack if I'm going on a long training run, and there's no way of filling up, but I much prefer bottles. You can see how much you've got left, and it's just much easier for me, bottles.
Yeah. And in those bottles, would you tend to have water or energy drink or a mixture?
Water, electrolytes, some coconut water, young coconut water is really good, really good electrolytes. Occasionally, some of them I will put some kind of energy stuff in, but I try and keep them as natural as possible.
Yeah. Salt tablets, would you bother with those or not?
I had previously used just the kind of zero tabs that you put in the water, although this year I used electrolyte tablets, and they worked really well for me. Yeah. They really made a difference, I think.
Yeah.
We're good.
Do you run with a watch or a Garmin, or do you like to run with no timepiece?
I run with a Garmin, yes, as much as it frustrates me. I have a Garmin that's the 310 XT, the big giant thing that looks like you could bring a plane in. I tend to do all my runs with a Garmin because I quite like looking at the data later on, doing some analysis.
Yep. For your support crew, would you have one team or two teams?
I would be happy enough with two teams, but the support crew wouldn't, so we have talked about splitting up, because it's obviously a very long day for them as well, but they've all feel that they would be missing out, so I think they're with me for the duration.
Yeah. And if you're taking around 17 hours, it's not quite as long as those taking 33 hours, is it? Have you got a favourite section of the West Highland Way race?
Favourite section? I quite like the section from Inversnaid to Ben Glass. I know a lot of people don't like it, I do find it frustrating at times because you feel as if you can't get a rhythm going, but I like when you get to the top and you start coming down into Ben Glass. I think it's quite a nice feeling there. And you're getting to the kind of 40, 41 mile point, so you're not too far from the farm and halfway.
Yeah. Great. On a run, would you listen to music or books, or do you have anything in your ears, or do you like just to run with nothing cluttering you?
I never ever run with an iPod or anything. I really love music. I do have audiobooks and stuff, but I don't know what it is. I just like to hear my surroundings. I like to hear my own breath and footsteps, and I never carry an iPod now.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite mantra that you use to keep going? Certain little phrase that helps you through the tough bits?
No, I mean, I just think about the support team that are standing at the checkpoint, and I know how stressed they looked at on the first ever West Highland Way, when I was significantly late down to Kinloch leaving. So I do think about seeing them, and I almost build it up in my head that it'll be fantastic to see them and it'll be great, and then it's all over within 5 seconds. I'm back out the checkpoint, it's all over. So they do keep me going.
What thing do you look forward to most in when you finish?
Maybe just sitting down. I really like to have a bath after it when I can. I know a lot of people maybe try and have ice baths and whatever, but I'm a kind of sucker for a warm bath. Sit down and relax and think, and that's it, it's over. And I can enjoy the recovery of some nice food and relaxation.
Good. And finally, if you had one tip to give to someone, maybe someone who's been listening to these and thinking they'd like to do the race next year, what tip would you like to finish with?
I would say absolutely go for it. If you're already doing ultras of 30 to 50 miles, then you don't radically have to change your training. It's quite a different race, obviously, but you have more time to go through some bad spells potentially, and you can still come through the other side. So I think it's a fantastic experience. It's a totally unique race, I think. It's obviously the longest races I've ever done, but I get so much from the West Highland Way, well past the race itself. I think it's something you can always look back on, and when things are tough, even outside of running, but things are tough in your life, then you can always remember how you managed to get through, you know, that difficult stage of the West Highland Way. So I think it gives a huge amount to somebody, or to everybody who completes it.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Paul. And we look forward to following your progress the rest of this year and in years to come. And congratulations on this year's race. And we, I say, look forward to seeing what you do next year. Thank you. I hope you've enjoyed episode 25 of the West Highland Way Race podcast. Unfortunately, Dave had a bit of trouble getting his ramblings to me in time, so I'll include that in a future edition. And as I say, there'll be a bit of a break now before the next one. But if anyone has got any items they'd like me to include, whether it's an interview or a race report from this year's race, then please feel free to send those to me, and then I can put those together in a future podcast. So thank you very much, and I hope anyone else is doing the Lakeland race this weekend, or any of the races that are coming up. The Devil's Race is the weekend after, and there's a good number of people doing that one as well. So I hope your final training and tapering goes well for that. So remember, slow and steady wins the race.